very logical question is, so how do you know what the cause of your illness is? How do you know if it's brought out by negativity? How do you know if it's a spiritual challenge? You know, watch this. If you begin to pay attention to where your energy is flowing, and if you begin to develop a very honorable relationship with yourself and a very honest one, and every day you begin to pay attention to where your energy is going and what motivates you to make the choices you do, then you will know absolutely if you're losing power out of too much fear and negativity. If I said to you today, tell me something, if you're exhausted, are you exhausted because you're filled with negativity and depression, or are you exhausted because you're filled with wonderment? Which is it? All right? You know automatically, I'm filled with negativity and fear. That's the negative doorway coming in. If, on the other hand, you have this sort of mystical proposition, it goes like this. It says, you know, I'm in the process of trying to readjust my internal climate. I know I'm supposed to learn something. I know new thoughts are awakening in me. I'm trying to get my bearings straight. I'm a little bit confused. I'm trying to realign myself. That's a very different climate. Do you see the difference? Okay? Very, very different thinking. And let me add that when you are working with yourself every day and you get to the daily discipline of automatically, energetically assessing everything you do. Just make it an ordinary policy, okay? You're going into a restaurant and you walk in and you say to yourself, how does this restaurant energetically feel? And stop telling yourself that there's any such thing as a coincidence. You are never, ever allowed to use that word again. You can't use that word. Wipe it out of your head. It no longer exists. It's a word for people who don't know any better. Okay. So what you do is you start walking into places and you automatically, energetically diagnose it. How's this room feel? How's this place feel? You have a conversation with somebody. And you say, how am I feeling during this conversation? Am I feeling intimidated? Am I feeling threatened? Am I feeling this? Am I feeling that? Then assess how you behaved with that person. Was I honest or did I BS a little bit? Do I feel good when I leave them? Did I leave my energy behind? When you leave a place, ask yourself a quick question. Is all my energy with me or have I left some of my energy behind? Ask yourself energetic questions all the time. All the time. When you start speaking energy to yourself fluently, when you touch something, ask yourself, do I feel any energy off of it? Don't go crazy over this. Don't get obsessive. Don't get that sort of nutso-ness where you can't go near every single pebble on the earth is suddenly vibrating light to you. Now, don't go off the deep end. All right? None of that New Age nonsense. I'm asking you to do this as grounded and practical as a living spiritual discipline that you can. You're going to learn to work with the flow and diagnosis of your energy, and you start paying attention. You walk out of some place and you feel drained. The word's drained. You use the word drained. From now on, if you say, God, do I feel drained? Connect the dot. You are leaking energy if you feel drained, and you stop and you think, where is it going? What part of me? How come? And you start to call it back. You stop in that moment, you take a deep breath, and you pay attention. What part? It's going out of my stomach. It's going out of my back. It's going out of my head. My head is throbbing. It's going out of my throat. Then stop. Evaluate. Take a deep breath and consciously say, I'm unplugging from that place. I'm calling my energy back. Now, in the beginning, this is going to feel like, do you ever see that movie Karate Kid where in the beginning discipline he has him doing something useless like waxing his car or something like that, just polishing his car, and this kid can't figure out why this teacher is making him doing something that from his point of view is so useless? You have to go through that stage. You have to go through the stage of doing all these useless dialogue with yourself until your vocabulary changes in here and you're reprogrammed to where you can actually feel what you're talking about. So you got to stick with it. Instantaneously, I'm promising you, one day, you're going to get to the point where it becomes so fluent because it becomes ordinary behind your eyes to ask these questions now. You are now going for the retrieval of data that's ordinary for you. You're making the retrieval of energetic data ordinary. And one day you say, why do I feel so drained? And instantaneously you get the response intuitively. It's because you had a bad day this morning at work. Then you ask yourself, how much power am I losing? Where is it going from? Your stomach hurts, your colon hurts, you're worried whether or not they're talking about you right now. So then you say to yourself, all right, agreed, I am worried about it. Now you have a choice. You can either get on the phone and call up and say, are you guys talking about me? Because I really need to resolve this. I'm feeling lousy. I'm losing energy over this. Or you can close your eyes and call your spirit back, whichever works. But from that point on, you're operating at the energetic frequency. It works just that way. Now imagine that you're working that way and you know you're working energetically and you're letting your power leak and you choose not to do anything about it. You make yourself more susceptible to illness because you might get ill faster or funkier kinds of illnesses, energetic disorders, fatigue, headaches, all kinds of sensitivities to light like you've never found before. Because when you start working with energetics, there's every reason to understand that you're becoming more and more sensitive to other things, to other people. See what I mean? So you have to start paying attention to yourself quite clearly. Now then, I want to add something about illness as a general disclaimer. And that's that there are always exceptions to the causes of illness. You know, when I talk about the cause of colon cancer or AIDS or whatever, there's always exceptions. And what I describe as a rule is the general cause, the cause I see most often, very similar to what a physician might say about an illness. And then there are the, you know, 20% that are exceptions. So please understand that. And the next thing is, while there are many illnesses people have asked me to talk about, we don't have the time to talk about, ends and ends of illnesses. I want to make the general point, however, that the greatest gift you can give yourself is to begin to work with your energetic anatomy in such a way that you begin to connect the dot that when you lose too much power, you make yourself vulnerable. And you work with learning to recognize when you're losing power by thinking of yourself as an energetic creature. But what I want to talk about now is, what do you do when you recognize your power is gone? How do you call your power back? Now, developing the will to detach yourself from something is a lifetime journey. I mean, the fact is, that's what life is all about, right? That is the nature of life, right? So when you feel yourself, right? So when you feel yourself losing power, or when you're dealing with a memory that has a lot of toxic impact on you, or somebody you have yet to forgive, whatever you want to do, whatever negative image you want to use, you want to call your spirit back, get as mechanical as you can. This is what you do. You start thinking of it as a technical command, as if you are literally saying to yourself, I'm commanding an order of detachment in your psyche. And you say to your spirit, don't attach to that person. Don't attach to that thing. And you accommodate your health and your need to detach. If it would help you out when I talk about this, picture something or someone that's got a lot of power over you. All right? Picture that. Picture a memory, a relationship, a husband, a wife. Picture something that has a lot of power over you. And now picture yourself programming your entire energy field so that you begin to detach from that power. And so what you do is you tell yourself, I am calling my spirit back. I'm taking a deep breath and I am retrieving my energetic field from that person, from that place, from that thing. And from that point on, you drop the thought form consciously into your sixth chakra, your mind. And then you say this, I want my vocabulary to accommodate this decision. And what that means is become very conscious of every phrase you use, every word you use that releases power to that person. I remember working with this woman whose entire life as a 57-year-old adult revolved around her healing the fact that she had been incested twice as a 6-year-old. Now, I don't mean by any means to diminish the trauma of incest here. However, I want to present the fact that that's an awfully long time to let an incident that combined took 45 minutes. I'm trying to give you a different perspective. And when I met with her, her life revolved around this injury to the extent that she was involved in incest survival groups, more than one, and a feminist group, and etc. And the reason I was talking to her was she, of course, had developed ovarian cancer. How could she not develop ovarian cancer? All of her energy was going into that memory and in keeping that trauma alive, doubly because that was her legitimate reason for having the social group that she did. Do you see the dysfunction in this whole thing? So when I said to her, you have to forgive and let this go. You got to let this go. Not only was that traumatic for the fact that she felt like she needed to experience facing her father, but the other reason was she was fully aware that if she let the wound go, everything would go. As a matter of fact, we walked this wound so thoroughly that her wardrobe was based on this wound. She could only wear colors that didn't remind her of that bedroom. This may sound like an extreme case. I bet you, if I got my hands on each one of you for a few minutes, I'm telling you, I'd find one part of your life that had some kind of thread this extreme. Okay? Now then, when I said to her, you've got to let this go, she said, but how? How do I call my spirit back from this? And so I said, well, start with programming it. And I said, now drop it to your sixth chakra. And here, what you do is you say, I command myself to be conscious of every time I use language that disempowers me. I want a little signal to go off so that I have an opportunity to choose a different word. Right? So instead of speaking woundology, instead of when someone would say, how are you? And she'd always go through her past to get to her present. Well, you know, I had my incest survivors group yesterday, so I'm kind of fatigued. How are you? Okay? She'd always go through her wound to get into present time. I told her, don't do that anymore. You're not allowed to do that. You can only answer in present time. Now, it was incredibly difficult for her to speak present time. She always went through her past to get to her present. Now, watch your own life where you do that, because I'm promising you there are places where you do that. And that'll tell you automatically of the part of you that's living in the past. And when you want to call your spirit back, part of the journey of doing that is changing your vocabulary to present tense vocabulary, where you don't let yourself talk at all in the past anymore. So if someone says, how are you? You don't tell them what you did yesterday, or even you just say, I'm fine. And if you're not fine, say you're not fine, but don't use yesterday as a reason for not being fine. Be present time only. Then drop the command to your willpower, your fifth chakra, and say, I'm calling my spirit back and I want to make choices every day that empower me instead of disempower me. So I want a signal to go off every time I am saying something or choosing something that causes energy to leave my system. Then you drop that intention consciously to your fourth chakra. You put it in your heart and you say, I am consciously commanding my entire emotional center to alert me when I am losing vibrations and so that I can be alerted and make a different decision in that instant to call my spirit back. What does that feel like? So imagine you're in front of somebody. You and this person have been talking wounds for years. And so for the first time, the person says, well, how are you? And you're about to wound out with the person. Well, you know, I've had a bad dream last night, da-da-da-da. And your emotional system goes, ding, 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 ding. I said no more of this stuff. Force yourself to say something good about your emotional self. Even if you find yourself stuttering as you say, I think I might be beginning to like my life. Oh, my God. Then take that thought form, drop it to the third chakra, and command yourself to feel good about yourself. That's it. You say to yourself, look, from now on, I need to call my spirit back from any image, any attitude that makes me feel that I am less than I am. I've had enough of that. And I want to be alerted to every time that happens. So you begin to feel a signal go off. It may be that vibrational, that uncomfortable, queasy feeling in your stomach or whatever it is. But you begin to respond to those energetic, intuitive signals. You're losing power. Call it back. And drop it to your second chakra. Every time I start losing my energy over finances, over other people, over issues of control, I want to know. Alert me so I can make another choice. And then drop it to your first chakra. Every time I feel unsafe within my tribal structure, anything that causes me that feeling that I'm about to have a tribal earthquake, alert me. Work with your spirit from this point of view. Does that make sense to you? Program yourself to become intuitively aware and knock off the notion that you have to be gifted to be an intuitive. It's a skill. It is nothing but a skill that comes with practice and attention to the right roadmap, if you will, to use. Now then, I want to talk a little bit about depression. And the reason is, this is the one dysfunction, if you will, that overlaps into mysticism, and I want to walk us out through the mystical lens. Depression has become beyond epidemic proportion. I can't even begin to describe how many people have gotten in touch with me or a million other people in the healing business because they are suffering from acute depression or chronic depression or whatever. And I think that there's a lot to be said for the chemical reasons for it, etc. Okay, so let's just say I spoke about all the chemical, toxic, and food stuff. You don't need me to talk about that. There are a lot of people who are much more skilled than I. I simply need to acknowledge that those are valid reasons, okay? You can suffer from depression for chemical reasons and from environmental reasons and et cetera, et cetera. What other reasons that fall more under the umbrella that I should talk about? And there are a couple that occur to me. And one is the mismanagement of your attitudes. I think that there is this notion, and I refer to it often, called the promised land, that people are obsessed with the promised land syndrome, that they think that somehow there is a place, a person, a job, a choice, a decision, something. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say on New Year's Eve, well, maybe the bad years are over, as if finally, we've reached decades of a guaranteed peaceful time. That's an attitude that won't help you out. I think it's much better to begin to live within the notion that happiness is an inside job. It does not have to do with your capacity to get the outside to stop moving. In other words, what I noticed that caused so much depression is people are disappointed that their fantasies didn't work out. And their fantasies generally tend to have to do with thinking that life should have been a certain way, could have been a certain way, and you're so plugged into that notion that you drain your spirit from being able to embrace anything good about your life. And what I would ask you to do is, if you feel like depression is a companion of yours, plug yourself in as a discipline into the attitude of gratitude. Just try it out as a novelty, which is, I don't care what it feels like, I'm going to live with gratitude. I'm just going to live with gratitude. I'm just going to appreciate my life just today, just the way it is, just in the package it came in. And start watching how much of you evaluates whether or not your life is good by the amount of money in your bank, whether or not you're comfortable, and whether or not you have someone sitting across from you at the dinner table. Take a look at how it is you evaluate your life and whether or not you're able to appreciate being alive for life's sake. I also think, having said that, that there are energetic causes for depression that are worth mentioning as well. As we have entered into the mystical era, I would refocus your attention for a moment to the late 1950s and the 1960s, which in some regards is the official beginning of the New Age, okay? The beginning of the nuclear age, the 1940s. What happened in the 1950s and 60s that has anything to do with depression? Watch this. Imagine, from an archetypal point of view, two extraordinarily significant events took place. One is the Chinese invaded Tibet, sending the Dalai Lama on his merry way out of that country and into the rest of the world. Translation. All of the power of the mystical traditions of the East were officially released from behind monastic walls and into the global brain. What happened on the Christian side, or the Judeo-Christian side, that was equal to that? Vatican II in the 1960s. What looked like an ordinary event in Rome was in fact symbolic of the official release of the Christian mystical tradition to the rest of the world. And all of a sudden, the Christian tradition penetrated the eastern side of the global brain, and the eastern tradition penetrated the western side of the global brain. Well, what on earth has that got to do with depression? Well, the dark night of the soul is a classic mystical experience. If you were in the monastery, if we were together in a monastic tradition, and if you had said the prayer, God, show me your face, let me see you clearly, a prayer people now utter while they're vacuuming their living room on a Saturday afternoon, you would prepare years to utter that prayer. How come? Because it was understood that when you invite God to come that close to you, God does. And what that journey means is, all right, you want to see me clearly? Then you have to go through the experience of having everything that is an illusion fail you. You have to look at every single thing that interferes with you seeing me clearly. You enter the process of what's called mystical depression, madness, the dark night of the soul. It was understood in the monastic tradition, they fully recognized when somebody was in, quote, that state, the dark night, the state of despair, where you feel completely abandoned, where you feel fully disconnected from your life, as if you can't connect at all to your physical life, as if you can't find your grounding, as if you haven't got a clue what matters to you, where you're going. As if all of a sudden, everyone you love, you can't feel that love. Where did it go? I can't feel what I feel. I know I love you. I wrote it down. But I can't feel it. Where is that feeling? What happens to that feeling of absolute abandonment where you go into that stage? I think that what's happening, it's been my observation, that the majority of people that I am meeting these days who are deeply contemporary mystics without monasteries, are experiencing versions of this type of depression, and simultaneously, the other side of it is that within monastic walls, what happened quite frequently is that as these monks and nuns and devotees went through their dark night, they emerged empowered in the same way. What kind of way was that? They could telepathically heal at a distance. They could levitate. It was frequently known that Teresa of Avila, when she would enter a mystical state, she would levitate so much the nuns would have to tackle her to keep her on the ground. I wish I could have seen that. And Francis of Assisi frequently bilocated. He was many places simultaneously. These aren't ooh-ah stuff. You know what that is? That's the consequence of having mastered getting yourself fully into present time. There's a teacher in India, Sai Baba. He makes vibhuti. He appears one day he's 6'3", the next day he's 5'2". He makes holy ash out of his hand. This reminds me of the stories of Jesus where he would make this appear and make that appear. And when they said, why do you do this? He said, look, I got to do something. But the reality is this isn't the big deal. It's understanding how easy it is the big deal. Getting yourself into present time activates the sight of your seventh chakra, high voltage visionary skill. You go through the dark night because this is your passageway into having your energy aligned into present time. This is what literally wires you to carry the voltage that makes the kind of healer that touches a hand, says a prayer, and somebody's illness disintegrates. This is the kind of force where you become a light. You don't even have to leave your house. You close your eyes. You literally receive your commands, perhaps in the dream state. I honestly believe now, I started to kind of get this impression a few years ago, that there are many people who are dedicated to global concerns. They have their mind and their heart set on helping to heal this planet, heal the environment, heal the aquatic kingdom, whatever form, to be of service. And now I would say to you that I think part of the fatigue people feel, part of the source of illness, part of the source of depression, comes from the fact that you're channeling negativity that doesn't belong to you. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the cause you've offered to serve, and you're plugged into that. I think it has to do with the fact that you've said to the gods, use me. And part of the way is not just to put stamps on letters, but part of the way is that you've agreed to let your entire system route negativity through your energy as a way of perhaps preventing some other negative force from accumulating in such a huge way that massive destruction would take place. I think that one of the reasons so many people are in, quote, depression is because their energy is being used for literally this reason. And that if they knew it, if it occurred to them, oh, I think that this is part of being of service, and they began to work with it and said, that's fine, I can pull some of my energy back into present time because the rest of me needs it in order to accommodate this path of vibrational energetic service, that you'd feel yourself becoming energized more and more and more. And I'd ask you, try that thought out if you want to find out if you're one of these people. Try the thought out. Ask yourself how much of your time and energy is spent wanting to help the earth, other concerns. And it may well be that part of the way that you're helping that is by allowing yourself to be used in this way. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about high voltage intuition, which is what I'd call mystical visionary material. And in addition to the survival gut instinct intuition that just goes with the territory, There's what I think of as high voltage mystical intuition, the capacity to see clearly beyond your personal self. And that's how I want you to think of it. Third chakra intuition is your own personal guidance. Should you buy this car? Should you go down this street? Should you move here? When you reach a point where you have matured your private agenda so that you can be, shall we say, spiritually trusted. And I want to say something as an editor's note. I'm always very self-conscious talking about this stuff because I don't want to ever come across as though I'm talking about it because I've mastered it. I'm talking about it because I know it's truth, not because I live there. I'm working as hard as everybody else, if not harder, because I gotta teach this stuff. But the fact is, I will not present myself as someone who's teaching this because I live there full time in this elevated state of consciousness. As someone who's mastered any of this stuff, I have not. However, I think what I teach is truth. Now, having said that, what I know to be true about that higher level of intuition is that what is required to access it, clear sight, the ability to heal others, etc., is the maturity not to have a private agenda with power. That's what I want to say. When you get to the point where you do not need a private agenda with power, where you don't have to get a brand new Cadillac to show people you've got a raise, all right? You know what I'm saying? Where you can live keeping power in the bushes, like in the grand Sufi tradition, then you'll be given the kind of power that really does heal others at a distance. That bizarre paradox, when you have no agenda with power, all of it comes to you. And that's the type of visionary energy that I think made a Francis of Assisi and it made a Padre Pio. Padre Pio was a Catholic monk, and he died in 1968. And he had the stigmata, the wounds of Christ. Now, I don't know how many of you know what the stigmata is officially, but I'll describe it. That's where he was praying in front of a crucifix in 1899, and a light shot out of the crucifix and into his hands, the palms of his hands, the side of his body, and into his feet. And he, for the rest of his life, had the wounds of Christ. Now, in keeping with the stigmata, this blood smelled like roses. Francis of Assisi had the stigmata. This is one of the signatures of it. It always smells like roses. Two, you bleed all the time, but you never need blood transfusions. Three, it's as if you become instantly blood transfusions. Three, it's as if you become instantly a healer. All those kinds of garden variety mystical skills become yours, as it were. Four, Padre Pio could bilocate. He was a monk in San Giovanni Rotunda, Italy. He never left the monastery, and yet he was seen administering to soldiers during World War II who had been wounded on the battlefields. He was seen talking to the Pope at the Vatican. Very interesting. One of the wonderful stories about him, this one is on record in the U.S. military, and that's that during the war, the Nazis were going to invade the town of San Giovanni Rotunda. And the local underground found out, so the Italians came to the monastery where Padre Pio was, and they said, Padre, do something, and he said, okay. He never left his monastery. And yet what was reported was as the Germans, of course, changed their plans all of a sudden and decided not to invade this town. Well, the American bombers had no idea that the Germans had changed their plans, and so they sent a bomb squad to bomb the Germans who they were expecting to be in that town. Only instead, the bomber squad sees a monk in the air with the stigmata and his hands out, telling them to turn back, and every one of the pilots saw this monk, and they turned back their planes, And when they came back, they reported having seen a monk in the sky, which is why they turned back. Now, I tell you this story because I want to end this series with the notion of what divine power is really all about with us. The fact is, we are more than our physical body. The journey is to become conscious of that and to work with that. In the early 1960s, a very prominent British writer named Graham Greene decided that he had to see Padre Pio. By this time, of course, the world knew about this monk who lived in Italy with the stigmata, who was by this time considered a living saint. Well, Graham Greene waited 2.5 years for a 15-minute appointment with him. And on the day of the appointment, he attended Mass. Padre Pio frequently said Mass because he knew people wanted to see him, and it was a way of sharing prayer with them. After Mass, instead of keeping his appointment with Padre Pio, Graham Greene left, went to the airport, and flew back to London. And when someone said to him, "How could you have not kept your appointment with this saint?" And he said, "I was not ready for the way that man could change my life." I'm going to give you that story as something to think about, because when you think about where disclarity comes in you, I want to tell you something. Spiritually, truth is no more than a prayer away at all times. The only thing that blocks it, if you look and ask yourself clearly, is that you are so terrified of how truth can change your life. And if I can help you in any way, I'd ask you to really begin to work with yourself as an energetic being, realizing you're actually working for the first time with the technical side of your soul. And from that point of view, spend time each day in prayer. Prayer is your highest form of accessing high voltage guidance and prana. And live with this thought. Every prayer is answered in an instant. If you ever tell yourself your prayers aren't answered, you're delusional. Unplug from it. From the moment you have a prayer, just back up and say, "Okay, where's the answer? I know it's here someplace." Because the moment you utter a prayer, you're given grace. It's answered instantly. Live in that consciousness. Live in that truth. Remind yourself of the 7 truths of your body. Keep yourself aligned. That's my gift to you. Thank you.
This concludes Energy Anatomy with Dr. Carolyn Mace. For more information on workshops and seminars with Carolyn Mace, please contact the Holos Institute of Health, Route 1, Box 216, Fairgrove, Mississippi, 65648. For additional copies of this recording, or for a free catalog of transformational audio and video tapes, please contact Sounds True, 735 Walnut Street, Boulder, Colorado, 80302, or call Sounds True at 800-333-9185. The theme music on this recording is by Noreen Narayan. Thank you for listening.